If you would, please turn with me to the book of Hosea. And as we go through the book of Hosea in our current study, we're looking for proof of God's everlasting love. That is one of the themes that is most prominent in the book of Hosea. And we're looking at it from that perspective. Through Hosea, as we learned last time we were able to teach from this passage, God uses a variety of metaphors to describe Israel's rejection of him. So God's people, not only in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament, have the capacity to harden their heart toward God. We see that in the book of Hosea, God is telling his people that their hearts had become hardened. And he used several metaphors to make that point. One of the most obvious metaphors was the fact that he commanded Hosea to marry a wife and she would become promiscuous. So Israel was becoming like a promiscuous wife. She was also becoming like an indifferent mother who didn't really care for her children. She had children, but she really didn't care about them. They were a bother to her. Israel was conducting itself like an illegitimate child. Israel was conducting itself like an ungrateful son. I identify with this one. She was conducting herself like a stubborn heifer. My dad used to say often, "You old heifer, you." Not to mother or anything like that, but he would say that. She conducted herself like a silly dove, conducted herself like a wild vine, and in the process developed a hard heart. And we noted that there were four things that are characteristic of someone who is hardening their heart toward God. First, there is discontentment in them. They're just discontent with the whole God thing. And they just kind of don't feel at home being around him. They begin to express disinterest in him. So they really don't pay attention to him. He's just a bother. He's out there, I know, but, you know, it isn't necessarily for me. Then they begin to express displeasure. They actually don't like the fact that he's out there because they know they will be accountable to him someday. So they go from discontentment to disinterest to displeasure, and then finally to displacement. They replace something else in their life to take the place of God. Now, for the Israelites, that often was an idol that was made either out of wood or cast out of metal or carved or chiseled out of stone. They would make an idol and they would place that in a prominent place in their home, like on a mantle above a fireplace or on a table. And they would actually pay homage to something they made with their own hands and say, "You are my God." Now that's completely irrational. You make something with your hands from wood that you cut from a tree, and it has the ability to control your life? That isn't even rational. But that's where a hardened heart goes, when it has no room for God. Now you say that that's not possible. Well, yeah, it is. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4 and beginning with verse number 17. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 17. This is the call that God's making to his converted people. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. Well, what's the only thing that can mean? Is that they were either tempted to do that or they were doing that. So they were living like unconverted people as converted people. The result is their mind was futile. That doesn't mean they didn't have a mind. It means they had a mind that didn't work right. Not empty-headed, just wrong-minded. They are darkened in their understanding, another characteristic. Alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardness of their heart. Now, this is a list, and so when you see a list, you can work backwards on that list. So they had hardness of heart. What comes just before that? Ignorance that is in them due to the hardness of their heart. So a hardness of the heart creates the disposition for ignorance. You're just acting ignorantly. But then that is preceded by alienation from the life of God, a darkened understanding, and an empty mind. And so someone whose heart is hardened has all of these characteristics in them. Now, you don't have to believe that for it to be true. You don't have to feel that in order for it to be true. It is true, therefore we believe it's true. And the caution comes that God has said that it's true. We have the capacity to live like that, to be like that, and we should be very cautious when we have the first sense that we are discontent with God. Isn't it interesting that Jesus knew the precise moment that God was turning away from him at the cross? He knew the exact moment. Our hearts should be so in tune with God that at the first moment that we are either thinking or behaving or have an attitude that is contrary to the will and the ways of God, we instantly know it. We know that we've offended the Holy Spirit, that we are not living according to God's pattern. The longer that we do not notice, the more hard our hearts become. And we become insensitive to the things of God. That's a terrible place to live. The old saying is, among church workers, is be careful with people because they're like concrete. They cure fast and they're hard as a rock. So we want to be careful as a leader that the hearts of people tend to fall away from God quickly and they get hardened in that condition. All of us are capable of that. And certainly that was true of Israel. And we want to avoid that with everything that we can. So God, as he was teaching us, is using these metaphors to explain how our hearts can be hardened. Now when that happens, we become very vulnerable. When our hearts become hard, things happen that we cannot control and we become vulnerable. We may think we're being real independent when we just stomp our little foot and we just say, I'm going to do this anyway, I don't care what God says. We may think we're in control, but all we're doing is coming into captivity. We're becoming vulnerable to things we cannot control. Three of those are mentioned in the text. One, there is a languishing leadership. A languishing leadership. Let's look at Hosea chapter 4 and begin reading with verse number 1. Hear the word of the Lord, O children of Israel. For the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. That means you. There is no faithfulness or steadfast love. There is no knowledge of God in the land. Now, how could that be? They went to synagogue every week. They went to Jerusalem 3 times a year to have revival meetings. How could they not know God? They're swearing, lying, murder, stealing, committing adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. So these are characteristics of someone whose heart is hardening. Therefore the land mourns, and all who dwell in it languish. That's where I've got the word from. And also the beasts of the field and the birds of the heavens, and even the fish of the sea are taken away. Yet let no one contend, and let none accuse, for with you is my contention, O priest. So God looks at his leaders in the believing household as the first people he wants to work with who have led to a condition where people did not know God. God says it's partly the priest's fault. Languishing leadership. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's quite a controversy in the church these days over whether or not women can be preachers. They can be elders, pastors. We're no longer arguing about whether or not Jesus is Lord, whether or not he's actually the Son of God. He is God. We're not arguing about how often to take communion. We're not arguing about baptism and what it means. We're not arguing about things that we have stopped arguing about some time ago and just established our church and going on. Now we're arguing about displacing men in leadership. Now it's something that God predicted in Genesis chapter 3. And we are now seeing the fulfillment of that in 2019. We are just seeing a skirmish engaged in the church over the plan that God placed in effect permanently for his leadership. As that begins to occur, we are going to see the prophecies of Isaiah 3 and Jeremiah 3 come to fulfillment. And the prophecies aren't pretty. When people displace God's chosen leadership structure. And we are seeing that in our day and time. You don't have to watch the news to see it. You can go to church to see it. And we are going to have to be very careful that as the church continues to exist in our fallen culture, that we don't become culturalized and have a languishing leadership among us as well. We must continue to be the pillar and ground of the truth and not compromise it in any way. It doesn't mean we're unkind to people or unloving. It just means we're very firm in our commitment to what God says is true. So a languishing leadership is one of the vulnerabilities. Another was stifled saints. I know I'm a little quirky in the way I think, but this is just the way it comes out of my head. That's just the way I think. I think in terms like this so I can remember. Hosea chapter 5, beginning with verse number 1. Hear this, O priests. Now he just talked to them in chapter 4, but he's going to add to people. Pay attention, O house of Israel, give ear. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to back up just a minute. I just remembered something. Verse 6 of chapter 4. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. Look at this. These are statements of absolute truth about the nature of God and the universe. It will never change. Jesus said, Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. This is a permanent record of God talking to people. We have copies, we have multiple copies of it. So the problem with Israel was not that they couldn't have knowledge, it's that they wouldn't have knowledge. And many of us can fall into that same trap where this becomes a dust collector instead of divine revelation. Stifled Saints, chapter 5. Hear this, O priest. Pay attention, O house of Israel. Give ear, O house of the king, for the judgment is for you. For you have been a snare at Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor. And the revolters have gone deep into slaughter, and I will discipline all of them. I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have played the whore. Israel is defiled. Notice verse 4. Their deeds do not permit them to return to their God. Oftentimes we see and we fall prey to the pleasure of sin for a season. Sin does feel good, but only in a fleshly way. It has the capacity to ensnare us and keep us from returning to the Lord. If you were following Nate this morning as he was reading from Hebrews chapter 12, you will remember in your mind as the text went that we are to lay aside every sin that ensnares, that so easily entangles us. Sin is something you do once, and you do it longer than you thought, and you pay a price you didn't know you'd pay. And so God calls to us to understand our vulnerability, that once sin is entertained and engaged in, it ensnares and entangles us, and it's very difficult to get out. Not impossible, but very difficult. And that's what God's saying to his people. We think it's just greed, but it has a personality. It has a power. It has a spirit of its own. And it overtakes, strangles out things that are good out of our life, as well as every other sin. Lying, cheating, stealing, cursing, whatever it is. Stifled saints, they're just stumbling around. And that would have been a good word too. And then there was offensive offerings, verse 6 of chapter 5. Chapter 5, verse 5. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in his guilt. Judah also shall stumble with them. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn from them. Worship can be offensive to the Lord, even though we sing songs about him. Our hearts can be so dismatched to that, that he finds it offensive. If one of my children took a baseball bat to the windshield of my car, and then come inside and say, oh, Dad, I just really appreciate you, and I really appreciate all the hard work that you do to have money to take care of our needs, I don't think I'm going to feel real good about what they're saying. And the same can be true for us, even when we're here this morning. We can sing our songs, but our hearts are far from him. Our words are right, but our hearts are not. And we want to guard against that, realizing we all have the capacity simply to sing the song and just sit there, and the words mean nothing to us. We have to work against that. Now, I'm going to ask Tim if he would to pause the tape. I want to use an illustration here that I don't care that anyone else understand. We are so vulnerable without even knowing it. And God wants to do something about that. And what he wants to do is describe his vital deliverances for us, even though we snare ourselves in sin. And I want to pick up the reading at chapter 14. Hosea 14. And let's listen to God describe what he's going to do. Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Take words with you and return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all our iniquity, accept what is good, and we will pay with bulls and vows of our lips. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride on horses. That doesn't mean you can't ride horses. It means we're not going to trust in horses. And we will say no more, our God, to the work of our hands, these little statues that we've made. In you, the orphan, the helpless, finds mercy. I'm sure when Hosea shared those words with Israel, it seemed odd because there was no way at this time in history that anyone in Israel besides the high priest, and only once a year, could anyone go in and talk to God. If they were a priest in the Levitical tribe, they could at least get close because they could get into the holy place. Never the most holy place. And if they were coming with an offering, they could get into the Israelite court, which was just outside the holy place, and give their offering to the priest for him to offer. But there was no way for an Israelite to get to God to talk to him. They could give prayers through the priest, but they had no access to God. As a matter of fact, they felt so far removed from God, they never called him Father. There is no word for Father in the Hebrew context of a relationship with God. And so they could come and bring a bull, a lamb, whatever, a pigeon, whatever. They could bring offerings. They could do all of that. But they could never get in to talk to God and share the words that he tells them they're supposed to come with. Until one event occurred. What was that event? It's going to happen about 7 centuries from now. Jesus was born. Lived a sinless life. Gave himself as an offering at a place we call Calvary at the cross. Took all of God's wrath upon himself. And the moment he died, what happened to the most holy place? What changed that changed everything? The curtain was ripped in two. Saying, come in. Come in. The sacrifice that needed to be given was given. The priest who made the sacrifice did it in a perfect way. The curtain is open because that priest made it possible for you to come into the presence of God. Now, use your words. Right now, I'm having such a wonderful time with my grandchildren. They love me more than they love Shirley. I get so much pleasure out of seeing the little ones run past her to come to me when they come on Sunday morning. I realize it's because of the cookies. I get that. But I still enjoy seeing them do it. Oh, they really like her better than me. But I have moments of enjoyment. But I'm enjoying right now being around Ella Rose. Because she's starting to use her words. And you know one of the words she has that she uses? A lot. Papa. Papa. And she doesn't mean Brian, she means me. Papa. So Shirley went over to visit, what day was it you went over? Wednesday? Thursday went over. She sees Grandma and she says, Papa. I just wonder how much pleasure it must bring God to hear you say, Father, Father, I've got to talk to you. I need you. I want you. I don't want all these other things. I want you. Please forgive me and please help me. It must be some of the sweetest words that God will ever hear. Because, listen to what he says. When you come with words, I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned from them. We do make God angry, but he turns from that anger. I will be like the dew to Israel. He shall blossom like the lily. He shall take root like the trees of Lebanon. His shoots shall spread out. His beauty shall be like the olive, and his fragrance like Lebanon. They shall return and dwell beneath my shadow. Psalm 91. They shall flourish like the grain. Psalm 1. They shall blossom like the vine. John 15. Their fame shall be like the wine of Lebanon. O Ephraim, what do I have to do with idols? It is I who answer and look after you. I am like the evergreen cypress. From me comes your fruit. Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the upright walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. What a still day. Let's seek the Lord, for we will find mercy to help in times of need. And he is the only one worth worshiping.